Rangers are going through a rebuild in hopes of playing in October in the coming years. So The Ticket brings you a podcast dedicated to the entire Texas Rangers system, from rookie ball all the way up to the big club in Arlington. This is Diamond Pod, brought to you by America's favorite radio station, Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket. And now, here's your host, Sean Bass.
Yes, and welcome back to your favorite baseball podcast. That's right, it's Diamond Pod. Thank you so much for downloading and tuning in, as you always do, you baseball P1s, as we talk everything Rangers top to bottom throughout the system. It is Wednesday, September 15th, midway through this final month of the regular season as we record episode 23 on this very podcast. And we will start by saying hello to Scott Lucas of the Newburgh Report. Hey, Scott.
Hey, how are y'all doing? Good to chat with y'all again.
Yes, and we were talking off-air before the show began, and you were popping on a hoodie at a Round Rock game, and that shows
I brought one just in case.
Hey, even bringing a hoodie to a baseball game as a fallback is a good sign here in Texas. We have been very lucky to not have sweltering heat as the norm this summer, and we're inching towards fall, and we'll get into it later, maybe inching towards Frisco being in the postseason because they got a big final week ahead. And speaking of Frisco, a dude that you see out there a lot, it's our friend Michael Tepid of LoneStarBall.com. Tep, how we doing?
I'm doing great. We had the final regular season homestand last week, wrapped up on Sunday, and now they are trying to get a playoff spot by playing seven in Amarillo due to a rainout. I can't remember if the rainout, Scott may know, was the rainout in Frisco or was it in Amarillo?
I actually thought it was in Amarillo, but couldn't swear to it.
Right. Well, either way, they've got to play seven this week. They played one last night. They won. They hit seven home runs in the most home run friendly ballpark in all of minor league baseball. And they are pushing for a playoff berth, and we'll have to see how it goes.
We will definitely get into that later. We'll talk about how all the prospects are winding down their 2021 with just a few weeks left in the season. The big club, it's they still will probably lose 100 games, but at least the brand of baseball here lately has been better. They've won seven of their last nine, including an 8-1 victory over Houston last night as we record this on Wednesday the 15th. Of course, two nights ago they were pounded 15-1, but you're only as good as the I guess momentum is only as good as the next day's starting pitcher. But a 6-3 road trip, the offense has actually been quite good. We'll talk a little bit more about the bats, but I wanted to start with the major league pitchers. And since we last recorded, we've seen a few really good starts from AJ Alexi. We've seen some things from Glenn Otto. We can talk about Spencer Howard either looking great or terrible because of his command. But I wanted to start with Taylor Hearn. And if you've listened to this podcast throughout the year, I freely admit my opinion has changed on him because he's not walking earth anymore. In fact, since he transitioned into the starting role with the big club on August 17th, 4-1 with a 3.94 ERA. He only has 20 strikeouts in about 30 innings of work, but he's only walked two over that stretch facing 117 batters. And if you told me there was going to be any point of his career where he only walked two out of 117 hitters face, I would have called you a liar. But full marks to him for harnessing his command, pitching with, I guess, an ease on the mound and some confidence. In fact, that was the big topic today, is Levi Weaver, our friend from The Athletic, put out an article about just the steps forward Taylor Hearn is taking and maybe cementing a spot in the rotation next year. And it's just been a real pleasure to watch him figure it out, and it's nice to see a guy that we had some hopes for a few years ago. Those hopes dwindle away this year, and now we're talking about him as a future rotation member. I wanted to play one clip of audio real quick. This is after his last start a few days ago, and it starts out with our friend Emily Jones asking him just about his maturation as a starting pitcher this year, and react to that after we listen.
Is there anything in particular that you feel like has clicked for you that's kind of helped this success along quicker than maybe you thought?
Honestly, no. I mean, I think just more so just getting comfortable in whatever role I was going to be in. I think you kind of saw it at the pen too. Like, I was getting more comfortable in that role as well. And then I think it took me a little bit to get comfortable in this role as well. And, I think just trying to continue having that mindset of just coming after guys, kind of like what I, always try to envision. But I think coming out of the pen helped me out a lot.
Taylor, what impressed me was that you were pitching the contact the first five innings. You didn't even have a strikeout. Could you tell me what was working during those 5 innings, you were outstanding?
I think my mentality of always trying to just get ahead and stay ahead, and not being a guy that's trying to chase strikeouts, and because, you know, these games matter a little bit more up here in the big leagues. You know, we're trying to win ball games. So I think that's something I've always learned, and you know, have learned throughout my career, is that, you know, I'd rather have 7 innings of, you know, 2 strikeouts rather than, you know, 3 2/3, or, you know, whatever it is, five innings, you know, just of like a lot of punch outs. But I know at times, like, it'll come, but I think that's just a testament to all the stuff that we've been working on and stuff that I've been working on as well, to try to get teams off of my fastball so that I can get early contact and get outs quickly, like what I've been doing, like today.
That's Taylor Hearn with the media after his last outing. And Scott, I want to start with you, just reacting to that. Knowing this guy has been a big strikeout pitcher throughout his career, especially at the lower levels, for him to still know he can miss bats but still feel like he can pitch to contact because his stuff has improved and his command has improved, is such a win. It's such a win for this organization.
It's a great development, and to be honest, it's better than I expected. I mean, I've always been, I don't know about high on the guy, but I've always been fond of him and was hoping that they would really give him a chance this year. If he ends up truly being a good quality starting pitcher, I need to go back and find snippets from earlier podcasts to talk about where I was touting him to make myself sound more impressive than I really am. But when I first, you know, he got into a stretch where he was doing well in a 2-inning role. And then they decided they were going to move him to a starting role. And I just thought, come on, he's finally having the kind of success we wanted. Let's just let it sit. This is who he is. He's a 2-pitch guy. Just let him be this. And turns out maybe he's a lot more than that. I was looking up his stuff on Savant. Well, first, Levi Weaver had an article in The Athletic where he's talking about incorporating a two-seamer and a different kind of slider, and you look him up on Savant, and 20% of his pitches are sinkers. He's also throwing a changeup a decent percentage of the time. Now, the four-seamer still is money pitch. That's where he's getting most of his outs. The other pitches haven't quite been as successful, but maybe we really do have a starting pitcher on our hands.
Can't key on that fastball anymore. I think that's the key.
Right. Yeah, he's got enough other stuff going on that you're just not sitting on that one pitch. I don't want to say it's a certainty that he's a starting pitcher going forward, but it certainly looks a lot better than it has. And I think regardless, I think we're kind of approaching the point where he's going to have a fairly prominent role in the organization going forward.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with, well, for me, it's a lot more sentimental just because I really like Taylor Hearn, the person, and I've been open about that I think that he's a great asset for the organization in terms of his attitude and his competitiveness and just kind of what he brings. I love having a local kid on the team. I always love that if that's possible. I want to jam the Texas Rangers with as many quality Texans as possible. But you know, I'm really happy for the kid. I didn't know about the two-seamer, to be honest, until today. I wouldn't say I have a full-blown allergy, but I'm allergic to 100 lost teams, so I haven't been really watching
you and the rest of the Metroplex.
yeah I have an allergy to a 100 lost team and an underwhelming ballpark. So, you know, it hasn't been all that compelling to me. Also, I've been pretty locked in. To be honest, when Frisco's home, that just, as you guys know, that just sort of allocates so much of my mental headspace to, as far as baseball goes, you know, because I'll try and get out there for batting practice at 4. If the other team has interesting players, I'll stick around through the 5 o'clock batting practice and then try and get back, you know, for the game for sure. But I didn't know about the two-seamer until you guys mentioned it and until Levi started talking about it. So that's really cool. I think that it's cool that they're tweaking the slider a little bit. You know, I'm just happy because I think that he is, you know, Taylor is, and we harp on it every week, but talking about the 1, 3, and 5 years, I think Taylor's, well, he's definitely in the 1. He's definitely a big part of the 2022 team. And then I don't think it's inconceivable to look at him as a big part of the 2020 or a big part of the 3-year plan either. I mean, that's the big debate. You got to see if these results will hold. I mean, these are, I mean, what are we looking at here? We're looking at a handful of starts, right? I mean, yeah. where he's been all right. And those are, as far as I'm concerned, those are still sort of statistical outliers until he's able to do it for a half a season or three quarters of a full season. So, you know, the jury's still out a little bit, but I'm extremely encouraged. I'm extremely happy for Taylor and his family and just the fact that he's at least got the arrow pointed in the right direction. I mean, that's such a huge thing for young players going into the off season. And we can talk about this as it relates to minor leaguers as well. What direction is their arrow pointed in? And I think it's awesome that for someone like Taylor Hearn, his arrow is definitely pointed in the up direction heading into the 2022 season and, more importantly, heading into the offseason this year.
Well, if we want to mention other up arrows, you know, A.J. Alexi had two fabulous, in fact, historic starts. The first two starts where a pitcher has gone 5-plus innings, no runs, and allowed one hit or less. First time that's happened in the modern era. Now, he pitched a couple nights ago against Houston in sort of a piggyback relief role after Spencer Howard, who just didn't have it after having it his previous outing for a few innings. But Alexi finally got roughed up, gave up some homers. Glenn Otto in his last start, I believe it was against Oakland, didn't have the same success he had in his first few outings, which, you know, that sucks. But at the same time, I think that's kind of good in a way. In fact, Woody was even talking about that after the game two nights ago where Texas lost 15-1, where, you know, maybe it's okay just for the maturation process of some of these young pitchers to – get your teeth kicked in every now and again just to know how to deal with that, just to learn, yeah. Hey, and look, Houston's going to do that against a lot of pitchers, even good ones, but this is all part of the process.
I want to address the thing about Spencer Howard because I think that the framing around the acquisition of Spencer Howard and what he was and what he is as a pitcher, I don't think that that was totally clear to a lot of people. It was clear to me. I assumed, and tell me if you guys have the same vibe here, but I knew that when the Rangers were getting him, he is a broken player with high upside.
Yeah.
I mean, that was what I was.
Yeah, sure.
My understanding was this is a guy who is basically bottoming out, but still has tremendous upside. And the reason that he was even available is because he's bottoming out, and this is a project. This is going to take, I mean, maybe well into 2022. But I after his last start, and maybe it was just fans being frustrated and stuff, like I was kind of seeing a lot of stuff on Twitter, and kind of some of it was, you know, was folks asking me about it, you know, what this guy was and that he wasn't good and all this kind of stuff. And I don't think that everybody really understood. Maybe, or maybe I didn't, but it sounds like you guys, this guy was a project, right? Like, this is a broken prospect.
Yeah, I mean, he wouldn't have been available under ordinary circumstances. If he had progressed, I mean, he was a very highly ranked prospect, and if he had progressed like that, we're not having this discussion. He's in Philadelphia's rotation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, he just, this year's been a mess for him, and the Rangers are going to have to try to fix him. But that also speaks a little bit to trading Hans Krauss.
Yeah, that's where the frustration lies, is getting rid of Krauss and then your all-star that was very fan and media-friendly,
yeah.
You know?
But, I mean, with Krauss certainly wasn't broken, but as we discussed on here, Krauss was not the pitcher. He's not the flamethrower guy anymore.
No.
Now, he's had some success.
I mean, Krauss's upside is well below Spencer Howard's.
Right, right. I mean, I think with Krauss, you're looking at, you know, I mean, Krauss, the variance of what Krauss could turn out to be is still huge.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Krauss could just, I mean, they did just send him to AAA, so he's going to finish the season there. But Krauss is the kind of guy, he might top out in AAA. I mean, I think he'll reach the majors at some point, but he might not be any good.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I also, and part of this is us as well, but the Rangers have had pretty deep history with Krauss, and I love that kid on a personal level, and I'm rooting for him, but there is definitely you know, you hate to use the term like makeup issues because that implies that someone's a bad person these days. That is not Hans's issue. Hans has makeup issues, but they're not related to him being an actual bad person.
Right.
That's not it at all. I mean, you're looking at someone who, you know, fairly openly was not sure if he wanted to play baseball anymore after 2019 and was not sure he wanted to play baseball anymore after 2020. And now, you know, he's been very clear about the fact that his son has changed his perspective as who he is as a person, as we've all been through, and that can definitely happen. But I mean, you're talking about a guy who almost quit the game 2 years in a row, each of the last 2 years. So I get that people are lamenting the fact that he's not in the organization anymore, but I mean, I don't know. I just as it relates to Spencer Howard, like, this guy is a work in progress. Now, it sucks that he's a work in progress at the big league level. Like, that's not cool, because he's going to be out there and his progress will be out there for everyone to see and to watch him get shelled and get his brains beat in sometimes on the field.
But he's either going to sink or swim. I guess that's the way you have to approach that. I mean, he's clearly excelled at the lower levels, and he should probably be a big leaguer stuff-wise. So we're going to figure it out probably in the next year, right?
Right.
Oh, yeah. Well, it might be a situation where, depending on how he does next spring, if he's having a really problematic spring, he could start the year in Round Rock.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't remember exactly what a situation is. I don't think there's any option worries with him.
Hmm. Well, I don't know. I just wanted to bring that up as it relates to Howard and to how people are perceiving his struggles. And, you know, I don't know. It's still an upside play. Yeah, I mean, it's an upside play, and everybody needs to, you know, have the proper framing around what he is. This is someone who's going to be a work in progress at the big league level. It's just not something you see very often, but I think that everyone needs to kind of bear that in mind as you watch him start. And I got news for you. So is Glenn Otto.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so that's a guy who his out pitch, his single best pitch, he learned this year. Yeah. At 25. Now, the problem with Glenn Otto as compared to someone like when you mentioned AJ Lexi, for me, there is still some projection left for Lexi. I genuinely think that. I mean, everybody saw him out there. He's 6'4", like, I don't know, 220, 215. Like, and he's 23 years old. I genuinely think he could add 15, 20 more pounds of good weight and maybe some velocity. And, you know, there's still some projection there. With someone like Otto, there's not as much projection left because I believe he's 26.
Yeah.
He is a full-bodied dude. Like, that, the butt is in place. The thighs are in place. Like, that's a full-bodied dude. But you also got to realize that he just learned the single pitch that got him to the big leagues is that slider. And he's still getting a feel for it. So he's going to have some doggy, you know, Cat would be so proud of me. The brake system between my brain and my mouth just works so well.
Wow.
But
all right.
He's going to, for once, he's going to have that some outings like he had the other day, and so is Spencer Howard.
Yeah.
You know, and so is AJ Alexi as these guys learn to compete at the big league level. And guess what? Josh Young's going to play the entire season next year in the big leagues, and he's going to hit 255.
Right.
And he's going to have a 330 on base and a 410 slug.
Okay, so we're going into a year where dudes are going to have to figure it out at the big league level, presumably, if they stay healthy. Okay, so this is a narrative we brought up last night on the postgame show. And, yes, it was brought up because Jordan Lyles had his, I guess, his best outing as a Ranger. 3 hits, no runs, I think a walk, 7 innings scoreless. As far as game score, it was his best game score he's had with Texas. And
you've got to convince somebody to sign him again.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I think a guy that's going to probably, with a couple more starts, bump up around 170. Maybe if he pitches well in his last three, he might get close to 180 innings. And, yeah, the ERA is over 5, and the home run issue is what it is. My question I posed last night to my co-host Ty, and then I'm posing to you guys right now, what kind of market would that guy have this winter? You know, obviously the labor nastiness is going to trump everything, but as far as like what he's doing this year for this club, what's your dollar amount or year amount that you would consider bringing him back, knowing that guys like Alexi and Otto and Spencer Howard, and if Cole Wynn comes up next year, all those guys are just going to be learning on the job, and it's still probably going to be a last-place club. What is there any value to Jordan Lyles soaking up 170 innings again next year?
I think so. I don't know if that's with Texas, but there's a lot of value, even if he's not much above a replacement level pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of value in that because those innings have to be pitched, and if he's not pitching them, then somebody else is, and there's the risk that you have to go deeper and deeper in your system and bring up guys you don't want there.
Right.
So that has a lot of value for a team like the Rangers.
So he's on a 2-year deal. I think it's expiring after this year.
$216 million
So another $8 million. Is that worth it next year to have sort of a safeguard?
That's honestly kind of what popped into my head.
Wait. So he is signed for next year?
No.
He's a free agent. But yeah, like a year and eight. I mean, $8 million is kind of crazy for somebody with that many homers and 5.20 ERA.
Right.
But it's not crazy for 170 innings.
Exactly. But when those innings are pretty close to certain, that's not crazy. I think the average fan is going to hear that and not be happy, but.
No.
Oh, well.
here's my theory on that. Give him the $8 million and protect Cole Wynn.
This is exactly right.
You need starting pitchers, and you've got to run out. I did not like, even though he did it quite often this year, I believe 5 or 6 times this year, I didn't care for AJ Alexi doing the piggyback. Like, you have a potential starting pitcher there who has started his first 2 games. I understand the theory. I get it. A, he's piggybacked before in Frisco. That was also because they had 7 pitchers for 6 spots.
Right.
And everyone's coming off the weird 2020. But going forward, I don't want to see AJ Alexi piggyback anymore. And if you need protection from having to bring up or like we're going to talk about, or I assume, like Scott saw Yuri Rodriguez last night in the proper role. He's not a starting pitcher. He's a reliever and potentially a high-impact reliever. So, but if because he's on the 40-man, if you don't have someone like Jordan Lyles eating up innings and giving up mega taters all the dang time and, you know, giving up 5 runs a damn game, but if you don't have someone like him, somebody has to, like Scott said, somebody has to eat those innings up, and it may be – you don't want it to be someone like Yuri Rodriguez.
Right.
Because that is a young, potential impact reliever, you know, so – And you don't want to rush Cole Wynn. Do not do that. Like,
that's why Kohei Arihara might be in this rotation next year. That's why Colby Allard, who I don't love as a starter, still might be getting starts moving forward.
Start them all and give Jordan Lyles $8 million more, unless he's a complete cad in the clubhouse, which I don't know.
Well, there was that stuff earlier in the year where he wasn't happy about his potential use as a tandem guy. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's still an issue.
That could be being a veteran too and having some hubris.
Yeah, but I mean, Lyles, his options are, I mean, it's hard to imagine him being a starter on a good team.
Right.
So welcome to your 2022 Texas
and Rangers. You have no payroll, so $8 million for him is not going to kill anything. Your bottom line spending. So, you know, look, if we're all comfortable with this being another bad year as this team continues to rebuild and the kids figure it out, unless they just get silly in the offseason and bring in a Correa and add a couple other free agents to give you, like, some weird hope. Otherwise, yeah, fine, whatever. Jordan Lyles, okay.
Like Noah Syndergaard?
Or someone like him.
Yeah.
What's Syndergaard going to get?
Coming off TJ?
No.
Below
coming
dip.
Off a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, is he going to get $30 million? 2 years, $30 million?
Man.
Man.
I mean, Noah friggin' Syndergaard.
Yeah.
Like, 2 years, $30 million.
Come back home,
20,
sure.
1 year, 15. 1 year, 18.
Have some Mansfield people drive to Arlington and go to those games.
Yes. 1 year, wouldn't 18 hate that. Million. I mean, I don't know that it's going to be Texas, but, you know, since he's local, we're kind of into that. But Who knows? But yes, I'm all for bringing. There's going to be veterans, crappy veterans, in this rotation next year, and the fan base needs to understand that there's going to be some crappy veterans in the rotation. So, welcome to 2022.
That's why we're bringing it up mid-September, just to get ready this winter when he's back on a 1 or 2 year deal. I don't know. All right, let's pause real quick, and when we come back here on Diamond Pod, let's talk about Frisco's playoff push. You guys have gotten some eyes on some prospects, and the Rangers made some front office changes since we last recorded. We go there next. Sean Tepet and Scott back here on Diamond Pod. Thanks for being by the channel. Thanks for downloading this podcast on the podcast feed of America's favorite radio station, Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310. The Ticket just talked about the big league arms. Now let's transition to the minors as Frisco is in their final road series of the season taking on the Amarillo Sod Poodles. And as we record this on Wednesday, September 15th, they're coming off a 13-4 victory last night where they hit a bunch of home runs. And they picked up an important win as they try to secure one of those final playoff spots. And, Scott, you're our minor league standings dude. Where exactly are they? I think when I got off the air last night, I think they were a half game up on Arkansas, correct?
They are a half game up on Arkansas for the second playoff spot. Arkansas's game was suspended in the middle because of rain. They're ahead if you assume that they hang on to that. Round Rock. Frisco will still be ahead by percentage points. They coming into the week, they were in a situation where over the course of the week, they needed to win one more game than Arkansas. And because of that rain out, Tepet mentioned, they have an extra game in which to do it. It's not quite that simple. It's not quite that simple because there's another couple teams, nibbling from behind them. But, it was nice to see admittedly it's an Amarillo, which is a massive hitters park, but it was nice to see that offensive outburst because over the past month or so, as many quality prospects as there are in Frisco, as a group, they really just haven't been hitting well. The offense just has not been very good. Mm-hmm. One thing that has changed lately, and we touched on this 2 weeks ago, and he's kept it up, is Sam Huff. He's having a good September and is finishing the year on a hot note. I looked it up. It's kind of cherry-picked, but he had a stretch where he had about five games in a row where I think he had one hit. And in the 16 games since then, he's hitting .322, .429 on-base percentage, .660 slugging, drawing walks. He's even hitting doubles now. He had a stretch. I can't remember. It was like his first 30-something games. Everything he hit was either a homer or a single.
He had a three-walk game on Saturday, and I had not been there, I would not have believed it.
Just a typo in the box score.
Yes.
Strikeout rate is about 30% lately, which obviously it isn't low, but it's down from the mid-40s where it was before. So, good for him for kind of finishing up on a high note. Foscue hit his first homer. Josh Smith hit two. Matt Watley hit two homers.
Whoa.
That's when you know you got a launching pad.
And Cole Reagans, who is, I think, kind of on fumes this point, got through it.
Hey, let me talk about Reagans for just a second. Because so on Saturday night, I got a chance to see Mackenzie Gore, the vaunted, highly touted, uber prospect for the Padres, who's had a pretty terrible season with command and has had big issues. And, it just 2021, he just wants to erase. So he's been all the way back down to rookie ball and all this kind of stuff. Started the year in AAA with a shot to make the Padres rotation, which is crappy. Like they just, oddly enough, it's not doing well. Underperforming, we'll call it that. It's not crappy, but because they have good players. But anyways, he was making his first start again in Double A the other day, and the first five innings, he was pretty dang salty. 8 Ks. The fastball was like 95 to 96 the whole time. He was, I mean, just dotting.
Is he going out of the stretch exclusively now?
No. No, okay. He still does the kick.
Okay.
The big kick comes up. They did a weird thing. Like, you can you can see it on my YouTube, and I tweeted out the video too. Like, there's this weird thing where he's in his warm-up in the bullpen. I've literally never seen it before. I sent it to a bunch of scouts.
Oh, that's right. I saw that.
They put a stick next, like a almost, it looks like a fishing pole, next to his knee. His back leg. You got to watch this thing. It's on, like I said, it's on my YouTube channel, or you can find it on Twitter. But yeah, like a stick, because I guess he was losing some push off of his back leg or something. I don't know. He's been a mess. They're trying to work with him. Pitches 5 innings, does really well. He's at 82 pitches, and a guy who just needs confidence, really. They brought him back out for the 6th. Already at 82 pitches, he quickly walked the first 3 batters and left. And it made me question the Padres' process. You know, the process for how are you developing players? How are you getting the best out of them? How are you doing this? And when I saw that, I was immediately thinking about Cole Reagans, because it's, and here's why. Because when I was looking at watching Gore pitch, I was thinking, this is a guy who's pretty spent on 2021, and he's got 8 Ks through 5 innings in Double A. Take him out now. He's been throwing 95, 96. Some of them were absolute seeds, like painting the black, like big league style, called third strike types fastballs. Get him out of there, because he's just a mess. I like pushing. I like the idea and the premise of pushing players, because baseball is a grind. It really is. It's hard as crap. It's a long-ass season. Unlike any other sport, it's hot. It's all those things. And if you're not good, it's even harder. What I've seen from Cole Reagans is toast. Like, his body and his arm and everything about it is toast. What I saw last night was a dude who... And it shouldn't surprise me, because this is already a guy who's come back from 2 Tommy Johns. That's a tough SOB. This guy has nothing left in his arm. Like, his fastball last week was like 90 miles an hour. He's way exceeded the innings pitched. He hasn't pitched in 3 years. He's way exceeded his professional innings pitched this year. He is just pitching on heart and intent right now, and he is fighting. I mean, it is impressive. Earlier in the season, he was 94 to 96 with that fastball. But it's not there right now, because his body's tired. His arm is exhausted. His body's exhausted. His mind is fierce. I've been so impressed with him in his last 2 starts at Frisco, where he just doesn't have anything, but he goes out there and competes like an SOB. And I love it. I mean, he's one of those guys who, for me, the arrow is up. He's going to be added to the 40-man, I would assume. And just the fact that he's finishing this season with some ferocity in his mind and in his eyes, despite the fact that his arm isn't... Because that's what it takes at the big league level. I mean, hell, one of the all-time favorite Rangers was never that good, but he was nasty. That's Colby Lewis. Like, Colby Lewis was never had elite stuff, but he was tougher than everybody else. And I like the fact that they're pushing him. You know, like the Padres were pushing Gore. I was a little bit surprised that the Padres process continued to push Gore when he could have just left. But what I see from Reagans is just toughness. And I think that Rangers fans have every right to be. It makes me more excited about the kid, you know, because he's a lefty with 4 good pitches and extreme mental toughness. And like I said, it probably shouldn't surprise us, because he's come back from 2 Tommy Johns, but I don't know. I like players like that. I like watching players like that develop. And this is a full-grown man. He's 23 years old, but that's a tough dude. And I think that he's going to get the most out of his career. He's going to get the most out of his body. And I don't know. I think Rangers fans should be kind of excited about him.
So we can presume Round Rock for him next year, I would imagine. Maybe not to start, but... You know,
maybe not.
Kind of depends, yeah.
Some point, but speaking of Round Rock, Scott, I know you were out there this week with your hoodie in hand, not on, but in hand. You watch Josh Young continue to hit baseballs because he's great, and you saw DeMarcus Evans touch 90 on the fastball.
Yeah, I did. I'm not – well, Evans' velocity has been down this year. I mean, we've all seen it. When I saw him last night, he was throwing back to his original style, which was just fastball curveball. I mean, maybe the fastball had a little bit of cut on it, but to me it just looked like a standard fastball, and it was mostly 88, 89, and he touched 90. Mm. And the curveball was about 76. And, I mean, he still got guys out, but it's a shadow of what it was. And, I mean, I assume he's healthy because he's out there and he's pitching, but there's – I don't know. It's strange. There's something going on. As far as Young goes, he's good, and I enjoy watching him.
Still good.
This is kind of a weird comp, but I'm hoping he becomes kind of what we hope Nomar Mazara would become. Not going to be sexy, maybe not necessarily ever an all-star. They're not going to put him on a Wheaties box, but just somebody who's going to be a good player, and you can put him somewhere around the middle of the lineup and not have to worry about him.
Like a 3-WAR type player year to year.
Yeah, yeah. Something like that. And maybe, you know, he'll sneak a 5 in there somewhere, mm-hmm. and he'll have a bad year in there somewhere, but just be somebody like that. I'm having the opportunity to see him a little bit more at third base. I'm generally in agreement with Tepid. He's fine there. I mean, the arm velocity is acceptable. His defense around the bag is acceptable. It's not anything that's really eye-catching, but he can play third base. He's, you know, whatever. He can do it.
But it's underwhelming, right? Like it's
a little underwhelming. I mean, it's not something you watch. There's never any – I've never even come – now, admittedly, it's only been – I haven't seen him that much in person. I'm not getting any wow moments, but he's competent there. I enjoy watching him hit, even when he's not successful, because he's got a plan. He's very professional. He makes a lot of hard contact. That home run he hit last night, didn't even really get all of it. It was kind of a little bit of an awkward, not awkward, but a little bit of an inside-out swing. And
arms extended, butt back.
Butt back, yeah. And weirdly enough, Ibanez had a homer like that the previous night, but he was strong enough to hit it out.
Butt back homers are still homers.
They do. Yeah. They go over.
Yeah. They go over the fence. Butt can go anywhere.
Even though he's not going to be – it looks like he's not going to be playing for the Rangers this year, I think that's a good idea. It saves his 40-man spot, mm-hmm. because there's going to be a ton of roster churn over the winter. But I still think there's a pretty decent chance he could – well, I don't know when opening day is. Let's pretend it's April 1st. He could be in Arlington on April 1st. It could easily be a situation like Elvis back in the day, and I think they did it with Teixeira, where they just said, you know what, you're good enough, and we're not going to mess around with having a placeholder for a month or something like that.
And I think that he's – yeah, and he's of the right age. He's of the right mindset. Like I said, I can envision a 250-year, you know, a 245-year for him over there and getting his feet wet. And then, as I've mentioned before, he'll keep getting better for those first few years because he's such a baseball rat, because he's got – you know, his makeup's just off the charts in terms of his dedication and desire to max out his talent. So, and I think that would make it – that makes it a little bit easier on the Rangers going into the offseason. So, going into the offseason, and this may be a conversation for a later pod, but third base is done for you? So, it's third base for 2022. Are you giving it to Young? And then, so third base and first base are the only infield positions I'm set at. I mean, I think it's Lowe and Young. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Nathaniel. Yeah. I mean, if he's going to get the ball in the air more, then okay.
I mean, he's a willing to... player, and the alternatives are not good.
Yeah.
You know, and going out and acquiring a first baseman is a crapshoot.
Well, you don't see them actually spending, honestly.
Yeah, not on that. you know. But and you know, and so those are my two infield positions. I think they go into the 2020. I think they go into this offseason. I mean, to be honest, at this point, I pencil in Young at third base for opening day. I pencil in Young and Lowe, and then that's probably it.
IKF somewhere on the roster, maybe not your starting shortstop, depending on what they do in free agency. But
right,
yeah, it's there's some question marks up the middle, which is where you need to be good. It is nice, and I know that you know not everybody's watching the games right now, but Leody over the past 2 weeks has given us a glimpse of what he can be. And I don't know if it's ever going to be an all-star, but it's a damn good defensive center fielder who can put the bat on the ball and do some good things with his legs. And that's been such a nice kiss towards the end of this bad season to see him, you know, sort of tap into what he was doing at times in 2020 during that weird COVID season. But, Scott, you mentioned the 40-man and the decisions they're going to have to make, and I didn't realize this until I got to reading about it the other day, but Willie Calhoun is theoretically coming back to the roster tonight. 10 months mm-hmm. after, or excuse me, 10 weeks after, you know, breaking his forearm, getting hit by a pitch. He's never had health luck. It feels like even though his numbers aren't great, he was making contact to all fields before he got hurt. They have a 40-man decision to make with him too, don't they?
I think so.
Yeah, that's because he's making like so 500 grand, and they're probably going to tender him a deal. And if they do, it's going to be close to $1 million. Which again, there's no payroll commitment, so it doesn't matter. But That's a spot that we have to start wondering about. Like, is he part of the even the one-year plan, right, Tepid?
Yeah, he's going to be arbitration eligible for the first time, and he hasn't the money's not going to matter because he hasn't produced enough to get any kind of a salary.
What's an arb price for a kid like that? I mean, is he $2 million?
Yeah, $1 million. Probably.
I don't even know if he's that. Somewhere between $1 million and $2 million, maybe. He just hasn't played much.
Right.
No.
But whatever it is, it's the money isn't going to be material. I don't know. And the problem is, even if he has just comes back and has the best 2 weeks of his life, you still don't know. This is his fifth year in the organization, and maybe things shouldn't have played out this way, but still look at him and scratch your head and go,
question mark.
I wonder what this guy could be. But the problem is, certainly Garcia has a spot locked down. Hard to say about Tavares yet.
They like DJ Peters, too. I know that we're not real high on him, but that organization and those people that are making decisions, they feel like they might have found something because, and I know it's sort of roll your eyes a little bit, but the fact he's willing to learn and adjust.
Yeah.
And maybe it's actually paying off a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I mean, his on-base percentage – at least he did a little well. He barely played with the Dodgers, but on base percentage is .226, and I mean, that's awfully hard to overcome.
Yeah.
No matter how many homers you hit, but maybe it still creates a situation where, given Calhoun's other limitations, if he's not hitting the crap out of the ball all the time, what's the point?
And Eli White's not going to be ready next year. He didn't have Tommy John, but he had, you know, elbow surgery, and you know, that's going to set him back.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't have anything against Eli White, never been – same. Whatever. The idea of Eli White having a starting role is just – that's never appealed to me at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know how they used to have – and Scott will certainly remember all these days when scouts used to always talk about 2,000 plate appearances in the minors. That was like the holy – that was the number that – unless the guy was a superstar, 2,000 plate appearances in the minors was your ultimate barometer. Well, I just looked it up. DJ Peters has 2,193 plate appearances in the minors. 266, 359, 489. 848 OPS with a 266 average. That's not bad.
No.
That's not an everyday player at the big league level. But that's a big leaguer.
I think he's a fourth outfielder on a good team. Like if he hits his top side.
Not a freakishly good team like the Dodgers were. They were ready to get rid of him.
Can I interject something? Because I thought this was where you're going with this. I'm on Willie Calhoun's page.
Oh, yeah.
He's got 2,086 minor league plate appearances in his career.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
288, 356, 499.
Yeah.
So
it's
damn near the same.
Well, I will remain the Willie Calhoun high man because I saw him do remarkable things in Double A with Tulsa. So, and because I just really like him as a player and kind of the attitude that he brings and the person that he is or seems to be. I don't really know him, you know, at all, but I don't know. I mean, but he can't play center field 2 days a week.
No.
Yeah. You know, I mean, DJ Peters is a corner outfielder who can not kill you in center. And I mean,
he hits the ball hard. That's the thing. Like, it's hard to, like, I mean, you want to get caught up in some of the warts with him, but when he hits a ball like he hit last night,
right,
415 feet on a line over the left center field wall, you're like,
that's 'cause he's
well, he's got that in his bag, you know?
Yeah, he's a physical specimen. But again, we're, you know, I'm spending too much mental shelf space on a guy who, like you said, is a fourth outfielder on a decent team and is clearly part of the 2022. So he's in the one-year program. I'm not putting him in the three or the five. But for next year, great.
Yeah.
Great. You got DJ Peters. What does that mean for Calhoun? I don't know, man. I mean, but
That's a hard decision.
Still feels like they're going to let Calhoun walk, and he's probably going to go somewhere. And
I know.
Be healthy and rake.
That would be so Rangers.
You know?
Yeah.
It would be so Rangers.
It would be. I mean, he's had a weird it's just a baffling career. I mean,
his injuries are bizarre.
A lot of it's just bad luck.
Hey, speaking of 40 man, while we're just kind of scatter shooting about that, but before the season, I said no to Bubba Thompson. As the season's wrapping up, yes.
Yeah, I agree. I'm exactly the same way. I was kind of not super enthused about him coming in, but I feel like he's done enough.
Yep. And he would be exactly the type of person.
His particular skill set.
Yep. And by the way, it would be the worst possible thing for Bubba's development to be taken in the Rule 5 pick, because then he would just be stashed on the end of a bench. He would be used as a defensive substitute. He would, you know, play 2 days a week. It would be the worst thing for his development, because he is the pure definition of a slow burn. Like, that is a player with tools and still decidedly lacking in baseball ability.
I agree. I think
the tools
if
are still there.
Even though Steel Walker's at an older and at a higher level, Thompson to me makes a lot more sense as a Rule 5 pick if you're going to take a chance on the guy.
Yep.
No, I think he gets added, and then probably needs another year and a full season in the minor leagues. I don't know if that's at Round Rock next year or starts at Frisco and moves to Round Rock. That kind of just depends on the outfield situation, but he needs another 500 at bats in the minors. So I don't know, but yeah, he was one that at the beginning of the season I probably would have said not likely to be added. Now, having seen him every day, I'm in. Put that guy in the 40 man. It's still not a star. It's probably not an everyday guy, but you know, there's something there. There's a little something there.
Well, we didn't podcast last week, but we had some news come down the pike, and it's one of those stories that, you know, people like us might go, oh, this is interesting, but your common fan just goes, oh, whatever. It's the Rangers front office. They need to all be fired anyway and bring Nolan back. But we got the news that there was a number of changes throughout the front office. Now, it's not that, like, people are leaving necessarily, just roles and titles are shifting. Like, Josh Boyd, the assistant GM, is now vice president. You've got the other AGM, Mike Daly, is being shifted to another role. I guess he still has his title, but they kind of have a nebulous set of responsibilities that nobody quite knows right now. And help me out. Who's the farm director?
There isn't one.
There's one? Okay. So
there is one right now.
Yeah, there was a lot of moves. And again,
they'll find one.
I mean, these are people.
Ross Fenstermaker.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Big ups to Ross.
Absolutely.
And, you know, he's been headed up the international scouting, headed a lot of the different projects that they've been doing over the last few years. He's been pretty instrumental in getting a lot of these players, a lot of the trade stuff, you know, like the Pirates trade, where they were able to, get Apostle and Hearn and, you know, a lot of those deals Ross was a part of. So good to see him move up to do the whatever he is. I can't remember what his promotion was.
There's so much title creep.
I get all the titles.
Sometimes I read the titles and I'm still like, Okay, what does that mean? What do you actually
Vice President and AGM for Player AGM. Development and International Operations.
There you go.
It's a very wordy
title. I knew he was moved up to an AGM, but I wasn't sure about the rest of that stuff. So.
Well, that title, that almost sounds farm directory.
Right.
Could be.
Yeah.
Right. Paul Kruger's now Director of Baseball Operations on the big league side after doing that with the minors, you know.
His is arguably the biggest switch. Mm-hmm. He was at the game last night, and I was chatting with him a little bit, and he said it was going to be a little weird to not be in minor league parks all the time.
Yeah, he says that until he gets that first couple of nights at the Ritz or the Fairmont in San Francisco.
There you go.
He's wearing the robe around the hotel room.
When they first roll out to Oakland, and he stays at that Fairmont Hotel in San Francisco, kind of overlooking the bay, and you know, is able to just walk downstairs, and I assume with that salary he'll be able to buy the $23 omelet that is available, or the $9 glass of orange juice.
I could crush a $23 omelet right now. I'm hungry.
I could crush a $3 omelet, man.
Yeah. But, I mean, I guess the general sense is maybe we're fine. It's Chris Young's hiring was kind of strange, and we've all been sitting there going – How much of what's going on is him? And I would assume that these kind of moves that are going on now, a lot of that is him putting, not like he's doing it unilaterally, but maybe this is him starting to put his stamp on the organization.
Yeah, maybe fanning people out to create gaps to where guys that he wants to come in and work under him can eventually. Maybe years down the road, who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, we'll find out more, but it's an interesting situation where I've just been trying to figure out exactly what Young is doing and how much responsibility he's going to have versus John Daniels going forward. So I don't know.
And they need a farm director. So listeners, if you have your resume ready,
send
it out. They're going to look for a farm director and I believe a minor league. Director of operations.
Well, I'm a sports director here at the Ticket. I wonder if that
puts me
in the mix. Yeah.
Yes, apply. We're all qualified for this. We all talk a ton of crap on this podcast and talk a ton of crap on Twitter. We're certainly qualified.
We've seen the prospects, so, you know,
yes,
put us near the front of the list.
I have watched a lot of minor league baseball games over the last 14 years.
I want a $23 omelet, damn it.
Yeah, well, that's big league stuff. We're not there yet.
No, not in radio.
That's only for Kruger. Kruger's getting that. So, but no, there's positions open. So, friends of the pod, get your resumes ready. Get your appies in there, man.
Well, apply for that job, listeners, and keep downloading. And we can't thank you enough. And we took a week off. Life got in the way last week, but rest assured, we'll be back in your feed next week and probably every week for the rest of at least the regular season. And hopefully a Frisco playoff push. So, fellas, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. This was good stuff. It was good talking to you boys again. And, Tepid, be well. I'll talk to you pretty soon, man.
Thanks so much. Go Rough Riders. Make a push for the playoffs this week.
Scott, I implore all of our listeners to keep reading your daily updates and all the good things you're doing at the Newberg Report.
Yeah, thanks. Hopefully Frisco can make it and y'all can go out and catch another couple games. I'm lucky enough to be able to get 5 extra games. Ooh. With Round Rock. If you haven't been to a game yet, come, because there won't be anybody there. They're not part of the regular schedule of the season ticket package, so it'll be you and me and about 12 other people.
And bring a hoodie.
Foul ball bonanza.
Bring a hoodie just in case. You might
bring
not need it.
Because that's a foul ball bonanza. I have been to a couple of games like that, makeup games like rainouts, and then, you know, they do the 4 o'clock game. You take kids to those, they will get 5 foul balls. I mean, there's no one else there. So, yes, bring your kids to those Round Rock games. Have a good time.
All right, fellas, we'll talk to you next week. Listeners, thanks so much. And this has been another edition of Diamond Pod here on the podcast feed of America's favorite radio station.
You've been listening to Diamond Pod, where the guys talk Texas Rangers baseball and all that implies. Subscribe to the Ticket podcast feed for a new episode every week during baseball season. And, of course, check out Diamond Talk with Ty Walker and Sean Bass on the Ticket after every weeknight Rangers home game.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL Fan Festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.